If you are just like everybody else, what is your hope? How do you get picked?
Welcome to How to Win with me, Pep Lyon. A deep dive into stunning winners in B2B SaaS to determine how much is strategy, how much is luck, and how do you win?
Differentiation. It's not about why sign up with your tool over some other tool. Differentiation is about why choose you. And the problem is that there have never been as many brands as there are today. The barriers to entry have never been lower. Access to capital is really good. Price of technology has significantly come down. Scott Brinker, VP Ecosystems of HubSpot, has been maintaining this marketing technology landscape thing, I think, since 2011, when there were like 150 MarTech tools, and now there are over 10,000.
It's sort of like, listen, the software landscape in marketing is huge. It's not shrinking anytime soon. It doesn't really matter if it's 8,000 or 10,000 or 20,000. It's more than you're going to be able to evaluate yourself. And so you just need to start to come up with other strategies of how you approach tapping into this incredible engine of innovation and marketing technology.
And on G2, if I zoom into any like subcategory of MarTech tools, let's say survey tools, I click into it and I see some familiar name, SurveyMonkey, and there's Qualtrics, and Typeform is in there. And then there are like 50 other survey tools I have never heard about. They're just like every other survey tool. That is the problem. Sameness is everywhere. The more competitors there are, the more similar they are, because they copy each other. Think about hotels. Close your eyes and imagine that you're walking into a hotel lobby. It's a hotel you've never been to, but already your mind makes up like what the lobby looks like and where's the check-in, and maybe there's the restaurant in the back. Hey, and then you go to the hotel room. They offer you a soap, a lotion, a shower cap, but no toothpaste, no toothbrush. How is it that all the hotels in the world agreed, yes, let's offer the shampoo and the lotion for free, but no toothpaste? Why? Because they all copy each other. Sameness is the default in every product category. The concept of USP, unique selling proposition, you know, it originates from the 1940s United States. TV advertising, you know, there was a commercial for toothpaste. One of them was for bad breath.
Tom, for unpleasing breath, I advise Colgate Dental Cream, because only Colgate's has proved so completely it stops bad breath.
The other one was against, we treat cavities.
Do something about cavities now. Brush with Colgate, the largest selling anti-cavity toothpaste in the world.
Today, you expect every single toothpaste to do all of it. You know, it's all been commoditized. And so how can you be different? Can you compete on features? Well, not for long. Classic examples like Snapchat launched Stories in end of 2013. A couple of years later, Instagram copied it. And then WhatsApp copied it. And then Facebook Messenger. And then YouTube. And then LinkedIn. And then Twitter. But for a while, the whole internet had Stories, which was supposed to be the reason to choose Snapchat's unique feature. The differentiation has to come from places other than features, because the competition will always catch up. But think about Tesla. It had how many years of advantage of being the category of one? For the longest time, it was the only one who made electric cars. And today, almost every single car maker is making electric cars that are equally good, have the same range.
2023 ID4 Pro EQS.
This is the 2022 GM's new
battery. Tesla lost the role of the innovator, and now they're competing on brand just like every other car maker. And if you look at any mature category, you'll find a lot of products that are basically the same. People ask me all the time, hey, how is this A-B testing tool different from that one? And I usually say, well, they're pretty much the same. Once novel features are now table stakes. And markets are getting only more saturated. What do challenger brands believe is the biggest threat to their life? According to a survey run by Adweek, market saturation. Can you name a product that is objectively better than an alternative product? It's a very hard question. Google search is still the best search product out there. The second best is not nearly as good. I've heard people at conference when asked this question say, oh, HubSpot. Well, is it really objectively better? No, I don't think so. It has a lot of flaws, a lot of shortcomings, and everything HubSpot can do, other tools can do also. Michael Porter once said that instead of competing to be the best, you should compete to be unique.
Volkswagen is a good car too. It meets a different set of needs for a different customer. There is no best in business competition. That's the wrong question. In business competition, instead of thinking about the fact that your job is to be the best company, the proper way of thinking about competition is that your job is to create a unique company, a company that offers something different, a company that offers something unique in which it has an advantage over its competitors. But if you think about competition as just trying to be the best,
okay, then
that often leads you to have a very destructive competition, where in order for you to succeed, your competitor has to fail. We find that any competition which is like that is a very dangerous competition. It's very, very hard to win. Important. Instead, if you think about competition as how to make your organization unique and different and to deliver something that the competitors can't offer, that creates a form of competition action that's much more likely to lead to company success as well as to benefit society, to produce unique products, to create unique value for the customer.
People have very limited consideration sets. It's not like, oh, I'm going to buy a new A/B testing tool or a survey tool or whatever it is, and they're going to look at every single tool in a category and make like detailed charts and feature matrices and what. No, they're not doing that. You know, first they have their shortlist, a consideration set, and that is already very limited. You know, maybe 10 tools. It's the brands that they already are familiar with, like usually the biggest and the most famous brands in the category, or other brands whose marketing they've been following. And then they will ask their peers, they will add a couple of ones, and maybe they'll Google some stuff. I look at G2. And there you go, there's like 10 companies. And if you're CRM, there's 500 CRMs. So how on earth are you going to get into that consideration set of 10? And the consideration set might be only just 5. At Winter, we ran this buyer research study where we learned that the buyers, they narrow their shortlist down to just 3 companies to get a demo with. Just 3. And this happens without talking to any sales rep. So they go to a website and they are looking for how is this different from something else. And so before you even win that shortlisting battle, you need to win the getting to the consideration set battle. What stands out gets picked. And if nothing stands out, it's just safer to go with the category leader. It's very hard to get noticed. Again, differentiation strategy is a way to stand out from the noise and give people a reason to choose you over others. Japanese author Haruki Murakami said that if you only read what everyone else is reading, you will likely think just what everyone else is thinking. The more competition, the stronger the commitment to differentiation should be. But mostly the opposite is true. It's constant comparison and benchmarking that lead to conformity. It's tempting to be also a safe and boring company, to say safe and boring things. Because you're like, if you're safe and boring, you're not going to offend anybody. Nobody's going to be upset. The problem is that also nobody's going to care. MailChimp does not need to be different. You need to be different from MailChimp. The category leader is the status quo. They can say generic shit about themselves. You cannot. So how can you differentiate? Well, multiple ways. One is through brand. Patagonia, who famously on the website homepage said fuck Trump and the president stole your land and things like this, it takes a political stance about issues like climate change and so on and so forth. And so it's polarizing on purpose. So you either love them or not. Is Patagonia clothing better than their next best competitor? Probably not. Probably it's pretty much the same stuff. The brand story is not bullshit. It's authentic. They live their brand. But so now brand becomes a reason to choose them, right? In her excellent book, Different, Harvard professor Youngmi Moon details three types of brands that stand out in the competitive landscape today. Let's look at these ways. So one is reverse brands, like IKEA. So most brands continually improve their value proposition because they assume customers can never be fully satisfied. However, reverse brands assume that although customers do want something more than the baseline product, they maybe don't want more features. So reverse brands remove certain aspects of a product that customers might expect and add in new unexpected things. You know, your normal furniture store is full of salespeople and furniture that maybe lasts a lifetime, but you know, IKEA provides almost no in-store assistance. Furniture is good for a couple of years, and you don't even buy furniture, you buy a bunch of parts, right? But you get great design at affordable prices, that the stores have an ultra-modern look, and you get meatballs, right? And while U.S. furniture stores have steadily lost out to retailers like Walmart, IKEA has become the largest furniture store in the world. And nobody has been able to copy IKEA. The other type is breakaway brands. So breakaway brands recognize that product categorization is arbitrary. We wouldn't eat cookies for breakfast, but lots of people eat sugary cereal with the same nutritional value as cookies, but it's cereal, so it's okay, right? Diaper manufacturers had a problem. Like, most parents were embarrassed to buy diapers after their baby turned like 3 years old. So parents potty trained them. And that was like cutting out into the customer life cycle. Diaper companies came up with a genius concept. They invented pull-ups, diapers that look like underwear. So the use case was for kids aged 3 to 5. Now social stigma was gone. Kids could keep on crapping their pants and profits soared. And the third kind is hostile brands. So hostile brands play hard to get. They're not feel-good brands. They're intentionally polarizing. They're like, fuck you. You know, you either love me or get the hell out, right? And so they're unapologetic about aspects, some aspects of their brand. When Mini Cooper launched in the United States, the brand made no apologies for being a small vehicle in a country that loves big SUVs. So hostile brands, you know, may make us feel uncomfortable, but in the end, their polarizing nature makes them stand out. Then there's this guy called Fabian Gerhalter, and he wrote a book called Bigger Than This, and he discusses 8 brand traits of successful commodity brands. Then there's belief. There's like shared values, like a brand that connects on a shared belief, like a tribalism thing. There's the Black Rifle Coffee Company. You know, they sell coffee beans like anybody else. It's a commodity product, right? But they're unapologetically pro-gun, supporting Donald Trump. Very polarizing. There's a group of people who love them and buy all their coffee, and others hate them with passion. So you need to attract a certain type of people and represent a worldview, you need to repel another group of people. A cause could be a way to differentiate. You know, think about Tom's shoes. You buy a pair, and then like poor kids in Argentina get a lot of free pair. There could be heritage. You know, something like goes long into history. Can't really deal with tech products, I guess. Nobody wants the old tech product, but like Coca-Cola, you know, is now a big heritage. There's transparency, leading with transparency to gain trust with consumers. There's been SaaS companies like Buffer or ConvertKit who are like transparent with their salaries even inside the companies. But of course, transparency and honesty take serious commitment. What would it look like if you ran a radically transparent company? What if you live streamed internal meetings? Nobody's that brave, but you would have no competition. That's for sure. There's also individuality. So it's like personalized products and experiences. You make something truly personal. And then another way to differentiate is personal brands. Founders that stand out. You know, Tesla has Elon Musk. You know, people who like Elon are more likely to buy a Tesla. Who's the CEO of Mazda? No idea. Of a visible founder. Like Microsoft had Bill Gates and Apple had Steve Jobs. And we still have visible founders like HubSpot and Salesforce and Google. It's just much easier to relate to another human at an entity. Now, ChatGPT and Sam Altman, another thing, right? Or Rand Fishkin and his new company SparkToro. Rand is better known and liked than his company. And people use his company because they like Rand. At Winter, I mean, people, 70% of our customers that come in found out about it because of me. And you don't even need to be a founder or CEO to use a personal brand for differentiation. Dave Gerhart, who also wrote a book about the power of personal brands, he was a VP marketing at Drift when he started to build a personal brand. As Basecamp founders wrote in Rework, pouring yourself into a product is a powerful way to stand out from the crowd.
As the CEO or the founder, you got to look at all the ingredients you have to grow your business through marketing. And I think one of the best ingredients that you have is to build a brand through the founder, because so often the founder of that company has a very unique point of view, a very unique story. And in the case of Drift, I went there. And David, the CEO, not only did have a very unique point of view and strong opinions, but he was he had an audience. He was a former chief product officer at HubSpot. Him and his co-founder Elias Torres, they had built a couple companies together before. He had built his own audience, and so the first marketing channel that we really like tried at Drift was to elevate his personal brand and to tell the company story through his social media and through his podcast, and that was. Created an unbelievable connection with an early in audience that I haven't seen anywhere else, really. And then we did a similar thing at Privy. I was like, man, I should write about this, because I think a lot of founders still like are sleeping on social media, or they're just thinking about it wrong. And so I wanted to put down my thoughts on like how to actually use marketing as a founder beyond like the traditional funnel demand gen stuff. How to use social media, podcasting, building your email list. How to use those things to your advantage, what to say, what to do as a founder. And mainly because the founder, you know, 99% of the time, they have some very unique story about why they started the company or something that happened to them in order to start the company. But they're also the person that's uniquely positioned to have something interesting to say. Those are all the best ingredients for social media.
If you're successful, people will try to copy what you do. Making yourself part of your product or service is a way to protect yourself from the copycats. Then there was this classic book, Differentiate or Die, which makes these suggestions for how to be different. Like be the first one to do something, you know, like Jasper just exploded onto the scene with the AI content creator tool. They were first to market and people preferred them big time. Or attribute leadership, meaning that you're better in some particular aspect. This is when you double down on a single attribute. You're known as the best for one particular aspect or use case. You know, kind of like Zappos is the classic example for customer support, or WP Engine was fast WordPress hosting, now a commodity claim. Look, Winter is the only B2B message testing tool, the only B2B ICP research tool. Just nobody else. You cannot own the same attribute or position that your competitor owns. You must seek out another attribute, and definitely don't play the game of category leaders. Play a different game. You think about your ICPs. Let's say you sell to product marketers. There's Product Marketing Alliance, they're for sale. They're like a media company. What if you buy their endorsement? Product Marketing Alliance recommends that all product marketers use this type of thing as an example. You know, HubSpot is a leader, after all. There must be a reason for it. So if you are a leader, if you are number one, talk about it. And of course, any such claims must be specific and credible. And then specialize for a target market. You know, focusing on a single target user or use case will make you a specialist. Paperbell is not just scheduling and billing software, but scheduling software for coaches. Make your products in a special way. Like you focus on a unique design or new unique technology that helps you differentiate your product. The last is be hot. So this is about tooting your own horn. It's like the Kim Kardashian strategy. You're popular because you're popular. Think about Zoom during the COVID crisis. Zoom became the hot thing. Then there was Clubhouse for a while. notion is taking over the world. And so being hot or, you know, experiencing tremendous growth can get your product or company some altitude. But once you're there, you have to figure out something else to keep you there. Once you find your differentiation, you should double down on it. Or as my friend Noah Kagan says, you're jillion down on it.
What's working to grow and how much of it are you really maximizing? And I don't think people are actually going to the limit. I wouldn't even say doubling. I'd say it's like a fucking jillion down. I think that's a little bit of the difference, is I will go extreme on the things that work. We'll try a lot of things that don't work. And then when it does work, it's like, okay, let's do this to the limit.
So if you're faster, go 10x faster. You have better customer experience, now do 10x that. You're super niche, go more niche. You know, and you differentiate on service. Well, how can you make that like ridiculous level of service? And finally, who owns differentiation at a company? Its differentiation is not a line of copy on a website. It's not something that you sprinkle on top of your company. You tell your market, hey, go add some differentiation on our homepage. No. Differentiation is a CEO problem. It's a strategic issue. And if you're not differentiated today, the CEO needs to build a vision for the company that is differentiated, and you have to build toward it. Because in the end, marketing is a game of attention. And if you're differentiated, you get it. And if you're not differentiated, you won't get attention. Thank you very much. Thanks for tuning in to How to Win, where in each episode, I unpack one aspect of winning in B2B SaaS. All your feedback is much appreciated. For more insights and opinions, follow me on LinkedIn or Twitter.